And fresh off the love train, welcoming you to the third hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here in Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with family and friends around the country, around the world. If they've got internet access and the best way to pulp stream, go to the Animal World website. That would be MarthaNorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live link upper right. That'll click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Upper Left and then Listen Online, and you'll be all set up to stream the show. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook these days. Search Martha Norwalk's Animal World on Facebook. Check out all the great videos, stories about the animals. You'll find the donkey there and the chickens and all kinds of good stuff. And the muddy Samoyed. That's why I don't have a white dog. Of course, I have a golden dog, and golden retrievers are the biggest mud dogs on the planet. And you just give a golden retriever a mud puddle, and they're in it in a heartbeat. So I have had that same thing happen when my Chowie Golden, when I lived around Brattle Trail State Park, and he would run ahead and get and jump into what I called the hippo hole. It was just a big muddy in the middle of Brattle Trail State Park. And I'd ride around the corner, and there's the hippo hole. And Rob and Chowie was in the middle of the hippo hole and covered all the way. And the only thing you could see was a circle around his eyes and the top of his golden head sticking out of the mud. The rest of him was in the mud. And oh, anyway, and he loved it. He loved it. So anyway, Golden retrievers are mud dogs. I'm just glad they're not white. I mean, golden is a little easier to deal with than white, but
Maybe they were white at one point, and then just, with, genetic evolution, all that mud rolling around, they decided, might as well make ourselves a little bit darker to adjust for
of
the
course,
mud.
that evolutionary is changing too, because I think about the British cream goldens. They're almost white now. My Robbie's supposed to be a British cream, but he's a normal, like golden retriever color. But a lot of those British cream now are white. And anyway, that's neither here nor there. Anyway, we are in the last hour of the show. It is an extra Sunday, and we are spending it with Merritt and Beth Clifton from animals24-7.org, the website to go to and the ones to be connected with if you want to know what's going on with animals anywhere on the world. There ain't anybody else that knows more than Merritt and Beth. I mean, all I did was say, hey, I got friends going to Cambodia looking to live there because it's so cheap. What do you know? Well, heck, we just learned all kinds of stuff. And what's going on with all the animals there and everything. We have enough time this hour if you'd like to chime in. If there's something about animals or a place or that you want to know about, you're welcome to give us a call at 425-373-5527. 425-373-5527. All right. So Merritt and Beth are still with us. Henry and Arabella, retired to the kitchen and maybe outside, are chiming in from time to time. Nathan has found a rooster in the studio also, and that one has been chiming in too. I don't know if Henry, probably I don't know if we want Henry to hear another rooster crowing. He might get a little defensive about his new lady love. So we found out that he protects her. Anyway, we were in the middle of a discussion, you guys, about Japanese whaling. And so it sounds like I think that kind of, my impression, it really is not wrong in that whale is no longer in big demand by Japanese people. And the only ones that really have an affinity for wanting to eat it are older people that were raised with it. But it's not necessarily a healthy diet. There's the contamination and there isn't a market for it. And of course, with all us realizing, of course, that whales are incredibly intelligent beings. And their sense of family and all of that and oh man, I don't know if you guys have ever explored interspecies telepathic and empathetic communication. But Mary Gettin was an animal communicator here locally from our. She moved down into Florida a while ago, but she wrote a wonderful book about her communicating with orcas, and man. The information she shared and what she got from that was really, really incredible. But they're incredibly intelligent creatures, and family is so important and all of that. And of course, the way we care about animals these days, whaling is not something that I know of anybody that is really in favor of. Now we have a whole different ball game going on with that out here locally with us and local whaling with our Native American tribes and so forth. But at least I think we can establish that in Japan, there's no high demand for whale. It's only the older folks that got used to it when they were younger and affinity, but none the young ones know. But it sounds like, Merritt, that there's a lot of politics and money involved.
Yes, there
And
is.
that's what's driving this and this big new whale processing ship that they spent $50 million doing, and that they want to rejuvenate the whaling industry. So what do you think? What do you think's going to happen, Merritt?
Well, sooner or later, the present generation of politicians will age out and be replaced by a younger generation with a different set of attitudes and a different set of political loyalties to other parts of the nation, other electoral sectors. And then there will be a transition. Meanwhile, they pulled out, Japan pulled out of the International Whaling Commission several years ago. They announced at the same time they would no longer do so-called research whaling within the Antarctic Whale Sanctuary. They're only going to do coastal whaling, which is now extended out to 200 miles offshore, their exclusive economic zone. So the idea is that they're going to kill minke and fin whales and sei whales in their offshore waters under the umbrella of being traditional coastal whaling. Traditional coastal whaling, though, is more like a Taiji, where the whales were herded into a bay and then killed into the bay. And they were mostly small whales, dolphins, pilot whales, nothing really large, because traditional Japanese whaling was done from boats that were powered by oars and sails, not by diesel motors, which of course they didn't have.
And you said, so I was thinking that this whaling tradition of Japan went way, way, way back, but you said it didn't really start until after the war, the United States contributing ships to this, and I didn't realize it was that recent, because I thought maybe there was argument for, this long-standing hundreds of years of tradition. But that's not the case.
Japan developed a mechanized both commercial and military fleet in the early 20th century, but until it had powered vessels that were capable of going far offshore and killing whales and bringing them back, they didn't have the means to have a commercial whaling industry. They didn't have the big four-masted schooners like we did in the United States when we had the whale oil industry, the Moby Dick era. They didn't go through that. They only got into it with the, it was really after the Russian-Japanese War of 1905 that they developed the powered vessels that were capable of doing commercial whaling. And they really only began to develop that industry a little bit in the 1930s during the period of time before World War II. So they were actually party to an international treaty to protect the gray whales signed in 1936, negotiated by the League of Nations. That was the forerunner to the International Whaling Commission,
Wow.
the agency of the United Nations. So their history as a commercial whaling power is actually much, much shorter than was
Yeah.
the United States in Britain.
Yep. So there's no argument there. So it really seems like it's pretty much all money and politics. Now, anything that just us regular folks can do to help with this process? I mean, we can't say, well, don't buy whale meat. I mean, that's not a, so is there anything that anybody can do?
I think just encourage the Japanese activists, and if you happen to know somebody in Japan who's working on the issue, certainly encourage them. But meanwhile, we've got a lot of issues here to deal with, including with whales here in the United States, where right here in Puget Sound, the orcas are being hounded to death by everybody going out there and following them. And now the
Well, there's
distance.
such curiosity. Everyone wants to see them and get photographs of them and so forth. But I guess we don't really think about how damaging our presence and noise and all of that can be to these creatures. And didn't I thought I read something recently that didn't we expand the distances that people, so what's going on with that?
Well, the observation distance has now been extended to
1,000 feet.
Thousand feet, yeah, that's what I think I
1,000
heard.
feet was 300. 1,000 feet is pretty far. It's like if you're sitting behind home plate at the baseball stadium there, it's like three times as far as it is to center field.
Because I got like 1,000 feet is like 3+ football field lengths, right? Yeah.
So it's really better, actually, if you can find a good observation point onshore to observe them from onshore than to pursue them in boats and be at the same level there on the water and try to see them. There's places like Limekiln Point over in the San Juan Islands, or here at Hidden Beach, or over on Camino Island. Lots and lots of places where there's really good onshore watching when they're in the neighborhood.
Gotcha. And so what about I think it is still part of the tourist industry that, you know, we have whale watching boats and so forth. Do you see that changing at all with the new regulation, or and do you have any, do these companies, do they follow the rules and do they keep the distance? I know sometimes you can't help it if the whales just show up close to you, but do they tend to follow the rules, and is this industry going to continue?
What will happen, I think, is that as people realize that a boat 1,000 feet away from a whale on the same plane of water is not a particularly good photo platform, and they're going out in the boats in the first place because they want to get closer to get better photos.
Yeah.
I think that chasing the whales will fall out of vogue. But meanwhile, as camera equipment improves, at best got a little cell phone that can take good pictures from 3 miles away.
And wow.
We use them in the Animals 24/7 website. She can, where we are, she can photograph whales over at Camino Island across the Saratoga Passage and get a good enough image.
Wow. So the photo equipment, camera equipment is improving that much. That we're going to be able to get the kind of quality of photograph we want without actually having to be out on the water and bothering the whales.
And without having to manage a lens that weighs as much as a full suitcase and then trying to get the thing balanced and focused.
Wow. All right. Looking at the clock here, let's take care of our advertisers for this half hour. And let's come back, and I want to touch base on Taiji, just because we haven't specifically, and I want to make sure we all know what's going on about that, because, you know, the fall is not far away here. So, and then we will move on to other subjects. And of course, if you want to chime in, 425-373-5527 or animalworldlive@hotmail.com. Stay right where you are, because Animal World continues straight ahead right after this, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Here's a thought to consider from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. With the love and care you offer your pets, what about another important pet project? Finding happiness. But how do you find happiness? Money? Health? Love? Or millions of people are finding that the regular practice of meditation or yoga can brighten your life with an inner satisfaction and contentment that no possession, position, or title can give. Find our schedule of classes and events at anandawashington.org. That's ANANDA Washington.org.
I'm Sue Rose Minahan, inviting you to tune in and join me on Talk Cosmos, Sunday, June 23 at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, with Kaleidoscope Visions panel about moon power, identifying the moon's four basic phases. Hear how our emotional life and story correlate with the moon in a participant's personal transit reading. Come journey with us. Talk Cosmos, Sunday, June 23 at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on KKNW.
Does your dog or cat have a health or mobility problem that is not responding to standard veterinary care? Are you looking for a non-medical alternative? I'm Nels Rasmussen, retired chiropractor and spiritual healer. I've helped people and pets all over the world to get their happy, active lives back when nothing else has worked. To learn more, go to healingministryforanimals.com. Go to healingministryforanimals.com now.
Hi, this is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I've got a question for you. Do you or anyone you know own a business, offer a service, or a product that does something good for animals, humans, or this planet? If the answer is yes, then I'd like to invite you to become a member of the Animal World family of advertisers. Lately, people are telling me they think radio advertising is exorbitantly expensive. Well, that can be true, but not on Animal World. Did you know that for as little as $45 a week, you can have two professionally written and produced commercials at no cost to you running on the show? You also get a link to your website on the homepage of the Animal World website and two live interviews on the show. Frankly, you can't afford not to do this. So if you'd like to join our great Animal World family of advertisers, or if you need more information, go to www.marthanorwalk.com to send me an email or call me at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258. Come on, give me a call and join the family. We'd love to have you.
Be sure to support the sponsors of your favorite shows on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey, y'all. Martha Norwalk, and we are approaching midway through the last hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We heard from the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga. They should be just finishing up service at the Blue Lotus Temple in Bothell. And the yoga hall is there as well. They've got the Linwood Ananda community that we had the big open house at yesterday. And the new East-West Bookshop in downtown Edmonds. And you can check them out at anandawashington.org. Remember, Dr. Nels Rasmussen is ready to help you or your animal friends with his neuroenergetic balancing and resetting the nervous system. And by the way, if your animals have had trauma related to the loud noises and 4th of July stuff, it would be a really good idea to get a private reset with Dr. Nels before the 4th. Then ways the jolly routines that I was teaching you about in the first hour will be more effective if the nervous system's stable. So check out Dr. Nels at healingministryforanimals.com, healingministryforanimals.com. Click on the contact link. He always does a free telephone evaluation, so tell him you want to talk. He'll arrange a phone call. And, of course, you do something wonderful for humans, animals, or the planet we live on. Come join our Animal World family of advertisers. We'd love to have you. If you're interested, you can shoot us an email, animalworldlive@hotmail.com. All righty, then. We are back with Merritt and Beth Clifton. Henry and Arabella are in the background, chiming in occasionally. They have access to the kitchen, in or out, their choice. But the first thing I got to do is I'm getting after Nathan. You just are being too darn selfish with that sunshine and blue sky you got on going down there. Because down in Bellevue, Nathan's got blue sky and some white puffy bright clouds. I still got nothing but dark and gray.
Well, I'm looking at these clouds closer to me, and they're moving north. So hopefully within an hour or so, maybe you'll start to see skies open up above you. I'm trying to send it your way. Blowing as hard as I can.
and you're raining all over Merritt and Beth right now, and Henry and Arabella. I wish you'd stop that, crying out loud. But it says I have nothing but clouds, Nathan, and a little bit of raindrops at 7 p.m. tonight. So I don't know that that's going to make it up here, but we'll do the best we can.
I guess if you want sun, just go south.
You go south. That's where it is. So, all right, you guys, Merritt and Beth Clifton here, animals24-7.org. Let's visit, you know, there's a long history, and it's one of the reasons why I'm bringing it up. This has been going on for so long. I think it's one of those things that maybe people have just, you know, it just doesn't hit the radar anymore. And it's been, you know, it's such a horrendous practice. Can you tell us what the whole thing is with Tai Chi and the dolphins and what goes on with all of that?
Tai Chi, and also I have to mention the Faroe Islands in the North Sea. It's really very much the same thing. The fishers go out in their boats, and both in Japan and in the North Sea, in the Faroe Islands, it's done exactly the same way. The boats go out, they make noise by banging pipes, they herd dolphins and pilot whales into shallow bays, and close it off with a net, and then go in and proceed to butcher the captive small whales and dolphins. Now, in the Faroe Islands, they do still eat some of them, and a lot of it just goes for fertilizer. They don't sell captive animals to marine mammal parks. In Taiji, most of the money comes from an institution called the Taiji Whale Museum, whose staff go and look at the whales that have been rounded up and select a certain number they think they can sell to dolphin parks. Most of the rest are killed, but those ones are taken out. They're held at the Taiji Whale Museum until such time as they are purchased by an oceanarium, the major customers in recent years having been in China. Historically, some of the customers were in Europe and North America. Currently, they're not.
Now, have we done a successful job of shutting that stuff down and that marine park type stuff in this country?
Pretty much. There's one big chain, the SeaWorld chain, that operates oceanariums, but they've not taken an animal from the wild now in, I think it's since 1969. They've had a successful enough captive breeding, 89. They've had a successful enough captive breeding program, and they've bought enough whales from other marine mammal parks going out of business that they haven't had to use wild captures. I should also mention that they have a pretty successful stranding rescue program, and every once in a while they'll have a stranding case that becomes part of their collection, but most of those are returned to the ocean when rehabilitated. They're part of the National Marine.
So we're improving things here. But it sounds like now, and when I said this has been going on for so long, the slaughter of the whales in Taiji, or the dolphins in Taiji, I mean, if you've seen any of the photographs, I mean, it's absolutely devastating to see, you know, that bay just solid, full of blood. And I think it was the dolphin trainer, Rick O'Berry.
Rick O'Berry,
who was the flipper trainer, dolphin. Right. And of course, he, over the years, he developed a great love and understanding of dolphins and so forth. And then, of course, completely changed his tune and realized, you know, how important it was to protect these creatures and so forth. But now, when the slaughter in Taiji started to become more mainstream and us hearing about that, I think that really was due to Rick O'Berry's work, wasn't it? And bring it to light. And I can tell you that I've interviewed him on Animal World, but my God, that's 20, probably 25 years ago or more.
Not for longer than that, even. The first person on that, first from the United States, was a filmmaker named Hardy Jones. And Hardy Jones then got Rick O'Berry and Paul Watson on it. And Rick has stayed on it, going back to Taiji year after year after year, doing vigils. Sometimes he has other volunteers doing vigils. They made the film The Cove there.
Yes.
And Rick was one of the key people in making The Cove, which won an Academy Award, made the world more and more aware. But unfortunately, because of the politics involved, all of that attention has not done very much to actually stop what's going on in Taiji. And it's one of these vestigial things, like the slaughter in the Faroe Islands, which has gotten much less publicity over the years, but is exactly the same thing. It's something that it has to die out of its own, I think. I don't think external pressure can end it, but internal pressure, if you know, local people develop a distaste for it, then it can fade out. But the other thing is, they have to have another way to make a living. In Japan, they do. In Newfoundland, it's a little harder to find a way to make a living. And in the Faroe Islands, the only industries they have are a little bit of offshore oil and fishing.
Wow. And I thought, because of, you know, the work of you know, and Rick O'Berry and the others, and The Cove, and getting the word out, my last understandings were that it was becoming very obvious that and that the dolphin bodies are contaminated with, you know, all the chemicals in the ocean or whatever, and it's just really not safe to really eat that stuff anymore, and that the Japanese people really don't want to eat it anymore, and that that most of it is just sitting in storage somewhere, free, you know, it's not being used. And my understanding of this, and this was some time ago, was that this was really starting to get to the radar of the Japanese people and them standing up and doing something about it. And I kind of had it in my mind that it was getting better and that they were stopping it. But it doesn't sound like that's what's happening. It's it seems to me that there are, at least like you said, in Japan, there are other ways of earning money. And, you know, it's, to me, it's similar to bullfighting. You know, when we say, okay, that's a tradition, we've always done it, we're always gonna, and it's tradition, so we can keep doing it. Well, and from us, like, hello, some traditions need to be changed. Some are wonderful, but, you know, there isn't an absolute there. Just because it's a tradition doesn't mean it's a good thing to do or a kind and respectful thing to do. But it isn't even to sound, you know, I don't know, have these dolphin killings the way they do, have they been going on longer than the whaling, or is it all about the same?
That goes way back into the Middle Ages, basically. Because
so that is a long time tradition, right? Then.
And it probably started out with just scavenging stranded whales and then figuring out how to make them strand. And so that evolved over a long course of time. But it's interesting, you mentioned bullfighting. I wouldn't actually make that comparison because bullfighting is strictly for entertainment. It's not.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Any utilitarian.
What I was making the correlation was just the tradition,
right?
Defense, but you're right. Bullfighting is strictly
about a couple
for entertainment.
Weeks ago, Colombia banned bullfighting. Catalan, which is a very large section of Spain, banned bullfighting. Mexico City banned bullfighting. You know, bullfighting, you can see the momentum is really definitely in the direction of that going out. And of course, the Pope banned bullfighting back in 1567, so it's taken a while.
Wow. Holy, 1567? Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
It has taken a while.
Yeah, several subsequent popes have reiterated the ban, but finally.
Well, that makes sense, but at least making progress there, but maybe that is because of the difference here, that this is strictly for human entertainment. And yeah, the bullfighters, I guess that industry maybe, you know, doesn't survive with no bullfighting unless they figure out a way to do it with mechanical bulls or something.
What has replaced it, unfortunately, is charreada, which is it's also referred to as Mexican rodeo. But there's one particular event, particularly brutal, called caldero, which is basically chasing a steer on a horse and reaching down and grabbing its tail and giving it a kick and flipping it down by the tail. And they suffer broken necks, broken backs, broken horns, and frequently all the skin is torn off the tail.
Oh,
and
geez.
This goes on with no regulation whatever in most of the country. Our friend Steve Hindy in Illinois has done a great deal to expose it there with.
So you're talking our country here? They're doing this?
Yes. And you know, this is what is done here is a lot rougher than what's done in Mexico, because in Mexico, these events are regulated by the Federation of Charreada, and they have to follow certain rules, which include not brutalizing the animals. But here it's done just by people that basically have a field or rent a field and get a few steers for the weekend and run them through the chutes 20, 30 times. It's much rougher than American style rodeo. And unlike American style rodeo, there is no regulatory body, no rules at all. We have jerk down rule in American rodeo where theoretically you're not supposed to bring down the calf in such a manner that it's badly injured. But there's no such rule for what's called Shari era here, but it's really more just Caladero, just flipping them down by the tail, as opposed to roping.
If I could just point something out.
Yeah.
Talking about Rick O'Berry and now Steve Hindy of Shark. And one of the things that they do have in common is they do have volunteers, but they have shed such a giant light on the issues that they're working on. With Rick O'Berry, he was making things so public and so known to the world that the Japanese government arrested him, and they were very rough with him. They finally did release him, but he wasn't doing well. He's an older man now, still very vibrant and vital. Another time he went on a starvation, he starved himself. So he has, you know, some people say, well, I'm just one person. What can I do? Well, Rick,
look at that one person.
And his wife, Helene, have also worked on these issues together. And Steve Hindy, who is one person, and he does have a crew that are very important to him. But these are people who are so determined and so focused to help animals and expose cruelty. And thank goodness they're there. But I guess I'm saying this so that the listeners will see that even though you're one person, you can figure out what you can do as a single person to help. Whether it's a phone call or volunteering, whoever you can, everybody can do their part. But these people, Rick O'Berry, Paul Watson, Steve Hindy, and even Merrick Clifton.
I would say, absolutely, you know, a wealth of information. There's so much, really, one person can make a difference.
He's a journalist, and he's been exposing these issues for 50 plus years. And that gives the ammunition to people who want to go out there and be activists to know, you know, have the information that they need. And
well, so, it's interesting that we kind of moved into this subject, the rodeo stuff, because, you know, I've turned the show over a long time ago, and I definitely get guided. But before we got there, we're talking, you know, because I'm under where we're going to go next. And I'm getting, I keep hearing rodeo, rodeo. And sure enough, the rodeo that comes up. Anyway, I think we will take care of our advertisers and stay on schedule right now. But then I'll tell you what questions came through after rodeo, rodeo, rodeo. So we're going to pick Merritt and Beth's brain on that one. So stay right where you are, everybody. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Give your dog, cat, or ferret the gift of great health naturally. Make NuPro all-natural supplements an essential part of your pet's diet. NuPro makes an awesome gravy, sure to please. This gravy provides fresh nutrients for a beautiful, silky skin and coat, strong immune system, and healthy digestion, among other wonderful benefits. NuPro's joint support formula is perfect for working dogs, large breeds, and especially seniors. So go with NuPro, your pet's best friend for over 20 years. Visit online at NuProSupplements.com for more information.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Would you like to access portals of possibilities for transformation, consciousness, expansion, and new experiences of health and well-being? Ancient knowledge and new science tell us that everything manifests from vibratory frequencies. Jude Ponton can assist you in shifting frequencies for personal health, aligning and balancing your energy or the energy of your home, property, or workspace. Jude can work with you remotely, office, or on-site if you live in the Seattle area. Jude can also teach classes in the Acutonic Sound Healing System. Check out whispering-dragon.com. That's whispering-dragon.com for descriptions of services. Or call 206-706-2836. That's 206-706-2836. You can even email resonate@whispering-dragon.com for information or to schedule sessions.
Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/1150KKNW.
Hey, I'm Martha Norwalk, and we are on the downside of this week's edition of Animal World, but we're here till noon and every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here in Alternative Talk, AM 1150. We heard from our wonderful NuPro supplements, and remember, it's N-U-P, as in Peter, R-O, supplements.com. Great supplements for dogs, cats, and ferrets. Check them out online, and if you can't find them at your pet store, they're all available on Amazon, so NuPro, supplements.com. Remember, Jude Ponton, our premier sound healer, is available to do her acutonics or gentle chiropractic and so forth with you in her sound healing room, which is magnificent, and what an experience. I don't know what I'd do without her. She can work with you in person or remotely. Check her out, whispering-dragon.com online, Whispering Dragon Center on Facebook, or give Jude a call at 206-706-2836. All righty. We are talking with Merritt and Beth Clifton from animals24-7.org. We've been talking about, you know, the dolphins of Taiji and the Japanese whaling and so forth. And somehow we evolved into rodeo. I mentioned bullfighting, and but then we ended up with rodeo, and that's what I was getting to talk about. But one thing I just was getting at the break was just to tell you, share with Merritt and Beth, I've always been very sensitive and always been more connected with animals than humans in this lifetime. Now, I grew up in the city, so, you know, I only had access to so many animals, but I still am at, you know, as older age, trying to understand the feelings and the senses I had as a child, because my parents would take me places and we'd do things that involved animals, because they thought it would be really great because I loved animals so much. But you know what? I hated the circus. I wouldn't go. I hated it. And I would leave. I would have to go. I would make my parents take me out of the arena, the area, when they're doing the animal things. I mean, and I was just kidding. And I didn't know why. I just hated it. Okay? When we'd go to the zoo, I didn't like the zoo. And the only thing I liked at the zoo, they'd let me out of the car and I made a beeline, and I ran 180 miles an hour to the goats because the goats were happy. And so I just wanted to spend my time there and talk to the goats, and everything was great. God, and I can remember, I couldn't even stand it. I couldn't go by the elephants. I couldn't go by where the giraffes were. I couldn't be there. And then they had Bobo the gorilla and stuff inside. They're almost like aquariums because they had tile on the side and the big glasses. And there was a tunnel you walked through that you could see the apes and stuff. And we'd be at one end of the tunnel. And once I realized how it felt in that tunnel and how it felt to connect with those apes, I would run all the way through the tunnel so I didn't have to feel any of that, and then wait for my family on the other side of the tunnel. Okay. Same thing with rodeos. Now, and I'm a horse person. And all of that, but I can't do rodeos. That's something I haven't really pursued a lot, other than one of the local things that sort of has to do with rodeos. And I thought we'd done something about it, but I'm one of the local things, Merritt. They take the horses in there, and it's somewhere, I think it's in Eastern Washington. Go down the hill, they run them down the hill, and sometimes they fall break and, you know, kills the horses. Do they still do that?
Yes, they do every year. A few years ago, I looked into the history of that, and it's not at all what they advertise that it is. They advertise that it's a traditional Native American event. It is not. It actually originated with a massacre of wild horses who were driven off a cliff just to get rid of them in the early 1920s. And somebody decided that this could be turned into a spectator event. So about 5 years later, this group of people organized as the Great Depression. They organized it as a spectator event. They recruited Native Americans off the reservation to ride the horses off the cliff because they thought that would be a greater show. But it wasn't something they had done traditionally. It was something that was being done because they were desperate for money in the depths of the Great Depression.
Ah.
I should also mention that when I got to researching the backgrounds of these individuals that started the Omak Stampede.
Now, that's what it's called, the Omak Stampede.
Right.
And so cowboys and their horses compete running down this cliff. And
right.
I'm wondering, you know, I would never put a beloved horse of mine through that. I mean, how can these people do that? But anyway, continue with your story.
Some of the same people who were involved in turning this horse massacre into an entertainment event were also involved with the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, geez.
The Omak area was like the Washington headquarters of the Ku Klux Klan.
Holy moly.
Yeah, we're not talking about community-minded local citizens here. We're talking about some really, really rotten people who did somehow manage to convince the community that they were doing something good to put Omak on the map. But they started out as bad guys. They continued as bad guys. They cleaned up the event a little bit after one of the riders got killed in one of the first events that they had. So I don't think they've had any more human fatalities since then. But they have
killed some horses.
They have a lot of horses killed there. Almost every year there are horses killed there. And the damnedest thing is that they've had the local Native American community has been sold on embracing this as part of their tradition when it never, ever was. Something
that's the piece that was missing. I knew there was something, but I didn't know what it was. But that's the history behind that. Wow.
And it's really appalling. And you can look up the Omak Stampede on the Animals 24/7 website, and you can read all about it with dates and names and references. It's all right there.
So we go to animals24-7.org and search Omak Stampede, and that's where we'll get the history. You know, because there's a lot of people that still support this, whatever we call it, event. And I think, often the tradition and all that stuff is mentioned, but now we know the truth. So that would be one way that people could counter the attitude with people they know that support this thing is to point them in the direction of the truth of the history of this event. And maybe that might make a difference in helping people change their minds. But we are learning and growing, and little by little, at least in this country and in some other places, we start to do things and Greyhound racing. We haven't even gotten into that. Does Greyhound racing exist at all anymore in our country?
There are only two operating Greyhound tracks left. They're both in West Virginia.
Okay. So a couple.
It's either been abolished or just plain died of lack of interest everywhere else.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything like this Omak Stampede that goes on anywhere else around. It's the only one I've heard of anyway, at least. I thought it was after I think maybe a horse died or something. It wasn't too many years ago that there was a lot of attention brought to it. And I thought that was going to make a difference and change it, but it hasn't, because it still continues. So do you see any improvements in that area coming up, or?
Well, as long as people cling to something as part of their heritage and their tradition, it will persist. But if they look at the actual origins of some of these things and they see what they really are, then they don't really have any reason to hold on to it. There was traditional Native American cross-country horse racing, no doubt about that. There's record of it. Right. But it was nothing like this.
Run them off a cliff.
The only similarity is that it involved horses. It was a totally different kind of event. And I looked up that and I researched the history of that too.
Well, amazing. So it sounds like that maybe is the key. If any of you know people that are really into the OMAC Stampede or that support this sort of thing, is that you want to gently bring up the true history. And if you go to animals24-7.org, search OMAC Stampede, and you can get the full history so that you'll be intelligent in addressing that subject. And then at some point, it looks like it's going to be a future show, but there are so many events and stuff that go on at rodeos and so forth. I just know that my heart won't let me go. But we should talk about if there's anything in, along those lines that can be changed or worked on. And I think all of these areas can be improved upon. I'm wondering, as we're getting towards the end of the hour, any good news going on with animals around that we can talk about besides that Henry has a wife? You know, we do have that good news of Henry the chicken has a wife.
Well, one thing that's good news, there are a couple of nations, Turkey is one of them, Taiwan is another, that introduced no-kill animal control schemes. And in Taiwan, although pet ownership is very rapidly rising, the spay-neuter rate there has been rising even more rapidly, and it looks as if they will succeed in getting their population, dog and cat population issues under control without having to return to mass killing. Turkey is a little bit different. There's an election coming up on Monday, tomorrow, where the current prime minister is basically staked his political future on abolishing the no-kill regime for street dog population control. And he's made that a focal issue because he's got a lot of domestic issues he doesn't want to talk about. And they have had some high-profile incidents involving dog attacks and automobile accidents caused by dogs running in the road and so forth. So he's been really banging the drums on that for the last month.
Uh-huh.
He's getting a lot of resistance. And the interesting thing is he's getting a lot of resistance from both traditional conservative Muslims who say that massacring dogs would be contrary to the teachings of Muhammad, and from the liberal and left-wing people.
Wow. So
this was our future story for last night. Excuse me, allergy season.
Yes.
Allergy season.
Yep, I hear you. Me too.
We're very eager to see the outcome of that election. And to see whether his strategy of, diverting public attention to dogs away from his domestic issues is actually going to work.
Right, but he's advocating slaughtering all the dogs.
Yeah, but he may just end up losing his office on that account, or certainly losing
a lot of
his parliamentary majority. We had also mentioned earlier in passing, Hanoi has banned the dog meat trade totally.
Excellent.
Vietnam. I want to mention another one of these outstanding individuals who just died this last week, and we did an obituary for him, Patrick Kilonzo Mawala, who for about 10 years trucked water by the tank truck load into drought-stricken Tsavo National Park to make sure that the animals had something to drink. He was just an ordinary guy. He was a pea farmer.
Wow. Yeah. And where was this?
This is in Tsavo National Park, Kenya. He was a local pea farmer.
Farmer trucking in water for the animals.
He rented a truck and then he passed the hat to raise the money to bring another truckload and another truckload and another truckload. He started doing it online. Now he was doing all of this despite needing a kidney transplant himself. He was on dialysis. He survived on dialysis for about 10 years, and then he just died this last week. He had a kidney transplant that failed. He didn't get another one.
Oh, well, bless his soul. Another great example of how one person can make a difference.
Exactly.
He made a difference to all animals.
They called him the water man of Kenya.
The Waterman of Kenya. Well, God bless his heart and soul. Gosh, that's wonderful. Sorry that he said. Now, do you know, did he leave enough of a legacy there or a tradition going that it will continue even though he's passed?
Yeah, he had put together a little organization, and the people who founded it have said they will be continuing it. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Well, I know it's been wonderful to have you two with us again. And I know that you were kind enough to join us, even though I think you have an event that you need to head off to. So I want to let you go so you can get to your Sunday afternoon and your next event. But I thank you for wrangling Henry and Arabella in for us. It's such a pleasure to meet them. And I'm so pleased that Henry has a wife. But I think, Beth, you have a little talking to that boy. And he needs to shape up, or Aunt Martha is going to have to come talk chicken to him or something. I don't know. But anyway, we will look forward to our next conversation with you. Will be and the 11 o'clock segment 2 weeks from today on Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. And if you want to be in touch with Merritt and Beth, it's animals24-7.org. Please go join the website and the newsletter, and then you'll get all the updates and all this other stuff. You know, there's never enough time to chat about everything, but we'll get to it all eventually. So anyway, thank you, you guys. Bless you for all the wonderful work you do for the animals, even though a lot of it is yucky news. But, you know, we got to talk the truth in order to elevate ourselves and move beyond it. So thank you so much for what you do. You have a wonderful afternoon. God bless. See you in 2 weeks. God bless. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All righty then. We next week, it is the last Sunday of July. Or excuse me, June. I moved us a month ahead. Never. Shame on you. Anyway, the last Sunday of June. That means it's an encore show. So join us for our last healing show with Dr. Nils and Linda Rasmussen. And you can get a surrogate healing just by listening and following Linda's instructions. So, Nathan, thank you so much. Merritt and Beth, Clifton, animals24-7.org. Thank you. And as always, I leave you with animals have feelings too. So treat your animal friends better than family. And please always be kind to open your heart and share your love with all living things. And we'll talk to you again next week.